Ladies and gentlemen, on today's Warner Archive Collection podcast, it is my great honor and my great joy to be able to speak with April Dancer, the girl from Uncle herself, the wonderful Miss Stephanie Powers. Welcome to our Warner Archive Collection podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We have had requests. I've been working with this library for many, many years, formerly at MGM and being at Warner Brothers for 12, 13 years. And everyone has always been saying, when are we going to get the girl from Uncle? When are we going to get the girl from Uncle? They said it to me in the VHS days, the Laserdisc days. Now, finally, it's available on DVD. 29 action-packed hours. It's an amazing series, and I think it's had such a wide following. I would imagine that people, many years later, talk to you wherever you go. They certainly speak to you about Heart to Heart, which is more recent and even more famous, but I would assume a lot of people ask you about The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. Is that so?
Increasingly, interestingly enough. And from people who were not of the generation where they might have even seen The Man from U.N.C.L.E. or The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. It's remarkable how strong this media is, the internet and the social networking. But it seems as if instantaneously people know about something that they might have taken them years to find out about before, and that's the good part of this instant messaging and all. So I'm very, very happy that it's going to be released. I'm really looking forward to seeing it because I've been out of the country and I haven't yet had a chance to crack open my my version of it. It holds tremendous fond memories for me. It was, in fact, my first experience doing a television show, a television series, and working under the pressures of the kind of rhythm of filming, because our shows, as you said, 29 episodes, was 1 year.
And today, an hour-long show is actually 43 or 44 minutes of film. In those days, it was 52 minutes. The hours were longer, so there's a lot more filmmaking going on than a contemporary television series nowadays will be maybe 10 or 13 hours for a season. You did 29 in 1 year.
And we filmed them in 7 days.
Oh, my goodness.
We filmed Heart to Heart in 7 days as well.
Huh.
I don't understand why the technique should have changed that much, especially since we now have faster film and less need for lighting. It takes longer to make an episode of television, which is quite odd given the fact that there are now so many more technological aids.
I've had the great pleasure and honor of watching all 29 episodes because we've remastered them all from the original elements, and I had not seen the series myself in a very long time. And I was struck by the April Dancer and your performance as that role really was kind of groundbreaking for the time because women didn't have those kind of forceful roles in television that early, that often at that period. Would that be correct assumption?
Well, in fact, it was, although we never made a point of it at the time, it was the very first hour-long television series starring a woman.
And certainly you started it magnificently and with Noel Harrison and the great Leo G. Carroll as Alexander Waverly coming over from The Man from U.N.C.L.E. as well. How did you come to get the part? I'm sure you're asked that all the time, but I knew you had been at Columbia Pictures.
I was under contract to Columbia at the time, and Columbia increasingly was passing me over for people who weren't under contract to appear in roles that I might have done, so I wasn't a very happy camper. I was at the time in England because my then boyfriend, who became my first husband, was acting in a movie called 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Uh-huh.
A little film like that.
I've heard of that picture.
You've heard of it?
Yeah.
And it was the most exciting place in the world to be at that moment, and being on that set. I was, in fact, I think, the first voice of Hal the computer, and instantaneously replaced by a wonderful deep baritone voice of a wonderful actor called Nigel Dempster, but I can't remember Nigel's name, but And Nigel was instantaneously replaced by the androgynous voice that Stanley Kubrick wanted from the very start, but had to go in his way of investigation. He had to go full circle, hear a woman and then hear a man and then go back to his original idea, which was correct in the first place, I think.
Right.
I then got news that Columbia had been negotiating to sell me to MGM, which is what they used to do in this,
right,
to play the girl from Uncle. And it seemed to me at the time, actually, a very positive thing, because the studio systems were breaking up. All the studios were breaking up at that time. It was a very dark period for the motion picture industry. Motion picture houses were closing all over the country. The antitrust laws had been placed in effect several years before, which complained about the fact that motion picture studios would make the product. They had their distribution arms, then they had their exhibiting arms. So that was considered to be against the antitrust laws. Of course, the hypocrisy is that Apple does the exact same thing right now, but we don't complain about it. In any event, it was singularly the cause of the end of the studio system.
Right.
And as a result, many people were looking for work. And I think that was one of the contributing factors for us to have such an astonishing assortment of brilliant and famous named guest stars. Boris Karloff, Peggy Lee, imagine.
Yes.
For being able to work with Peggy Lee. And on and on and on.
Yvonne DiCarlo. And what I was struck by was the great directors. Mitchell Lyson,
yes.
And John Braham.
John Braham. And they became friends as well.
Mm.
I was thrilled to work with both of them until their death. They became friends.
Mm.
And Mitch Lyson wound up at the Motion Picture Home. I remember seeing him quite a few times before his passing.
I was unaware until I started watching the series that there were such incredible A-list Hollywood directors that were indeed Vincent Sherman, I knew personally, were working in television, doing episodic television. And there you were on the world's largest backlot, the MGM backlot, which I assume you probably never went on location. Would that be correct, or did you?
We never went on location.
So it was all MGM.
It had locations at the studio. I mean, the backlot, which today, the Lot 3, which today is a housing development.
Raintree Condominiums.
It contained two lakes, a European city with a galleon, an old Spanish galleon, or which could be dressed as a pirate ship or as a warship or what have you. There was a sand dune for the desert movies. There were jungles for the jungle movies. There was every sort of conceivable background, natural location that you could film in, and some standing sets that could be dressed to be anything from European to Oriental villages. At the time we were filming The Girl from U.N.C.L.E., there was another show on television called The Rat Patrol, and it was about the Second World War and the British patrols in North Africa fighting the Germans. I remember we were both filming on Lot 3, the jungle set backed up onto the desert set. So we all ran off. We ran into the bush. They ran off into the perimeter of their set. And we met, and we were chatting away, and then our set said action, and their set said action, and we ran off and did our separate scenes. It was that sort of an environment.
MGM was really a city into and of itself in those days.
It was a world of itself. And one day, we were filming in between two sound stages outside. And as we're waiting for them to change the magazine or whatever it was, somebody looked off and gasped. And we looked off and gasped. Coming down between the sound stages, this long walkway between the sound stages, was a woman wearing her signature cap with her spectator shoes and her trousers and her sweater tied over her shoulders. And she walked straight up to us and she said, "Spencer and I watch your program all the time." Can you imagine?
That's really incredible.
And that was MGM.
One of the things that's been fun for me watching the show is to try and say, oh, that's the back of the Thalberg building. They're disguising it as a hospital or a police station. You can, if you're familiar with the lot, as I'm lucky to have been, you can spot a lot of the different locations that were disguised and made up. And you already answered my question, because I was going to say that in 1966 and 67, the studio was still producing 25 to 30 movies per year. So you must have run into a lot of luminaries in the commissary and so forth.
I would say that it was possible on any given day to see iconic faces at every one of those tables at the commissary.
One of the things people talk about with The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. is the incredible wardrobe that was created for April Dancer, and it was very cutting edge for the time.
Well, I brought it from England.
Oh, my goodness.
I was in England, as I said, with Gary. You know, the Swinging London was happening.
Right.
Carnaby Street was happening. And I bought all these clothes on Carnaby Street. And when The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. was eminent, I said, well, I'm just going to shop for my own wardrobe. I thought it would be timely, since everybody was deriving all of fashion. You know, Mary Quant and Vidal Sassoon were setting new trends, and everything was being influenced by the British invasion.
Right.
So I thought maybe what we should do is also try to emulate some of that and bring some of that to the show. And that was also behind the casting of Noel Harrison. So we were going to be this sort of mid-Atlantic couple.
When I was watching it, I was thinking back to my own memory, and I was like, wasn't Twiggy and all that in like 1967 and a little later? And I realized that you were ahead of the crest and bringing it over from England before the rest of pop culture did. I've just learned that from this conversation.
I think it was almost simultaneous.
Really?
Let's put it that way. But certainly before it was embraced commercially.
When you were filming this series in 7 days, did they give you a day off during the, or were you working 7 days straight every day?
No, we were working 5 day weeks, but we would do them in 7 days.
Wow. So they did give you, because I get tired, you know, watching them. I was like, how do they do that in such a short period of time? Because the pace of the shows is lightning fast and they're jam-packed with action, which is why I think people still enjoy them so much today, because they are filled with wit and adventure, which is something that's sparkling about them.
Well, thank you. I you've said it all.
I think I'll be fascinated to hear what you think of looking at all of them now, especially since they've all been cleaned up and they look, the colors are so bold and the images are so clean. It feels like very vital, relevant entertainment, and that makes it timeless. And I think that's why the fans have been so excited that we've brought it out on DVD, and why we're so thrilled to be able to talk to you about that today. So,
it's a great pleasure to be able to talk to you and reminisce about that. It was a wonderful moment in my life. It was a wonderful moment in my career. I loved working with Noel. We're still friends. He lives in England, and he's still producing music and writing wonderful lyrics, and I'm still working, and you can't get us down.
Well,
but it's wonderful to be able to look back on those days, because it's rare that people have long careers anymore. And to have had a long career is I feel very fortunate.
Well, and we're fortunate, too, because the reason I think why you have such a strong fan following is, thankfully, you have been a working actor for decades and changing with the times in different media and feature films and miniseries and television films. I've noticed that some of the series that we will be releasing in the future, there's one called Search, which was a one-season show that didn't catch on but still has a fan following. And I know that you were a guest star on that show, and that was done here at Warner Brothers. We get a lot of requests for those things, and I think it has a lot to do with the people who are in them and how audiences gravitate toward the personalities that they admire. Through our Warner Archive website, we also sell a lot of product that is owned by Sony Columbia, so we also sell the heart-to-heart movies. I wanted to ask you about something else that's in our Warner Brothers library, a feature film that was created by the production company most known for, I would say, somewhat contemporary horror classics, and that's Hammer Films and the film Crescendo, which we have available. Can you tell us a little about that?
Well, let's see. There are certain things I do remember vividly about that. Not the least of which is that while we were filming that, the United States landed on the moon for the very first time.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a weekend that that happened. I think we landed on the moon on a Sunday.
Right.
And, of course, I was supposed to go to work the following day, but it was about 3 o'clock in the morning when we heard those extraordinary words, one step for mankind.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to work in the following, I mean, I didn't go to sleep. Who could possibly sleep?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to be picked up a few hours later to go to work. And, of course, nobody could work.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was so joyful. Everything was so, I mean, we were almost speechless with the thrill of it all and the extraordinary joy of being alive to see man, the best of what modern man had to offer. So I think that was my primary memory of that entire experience. I had worked for Hammer before, working in a movie called, it was called The Fanatic originally, and it wound up being called Die, Die, My Darling.
Oh, I know that film well. That must have been quite an experience that I'm sure we wouldn't have enough time to talk about today. But
no,
it's very famous.
That's with a nice tall glass of wine and over a very nice evening.
Another film that you made at Columbia, which I do need to ask you about because there's so many amazing people in it. It's a very unique film and you had a large role in it, is Love Has Many Faces. What did you think of that?
Well, I don't know if I'd call it unique quite, but maybe unique and only in the sense that it will never be done again. Maybe that in that way it deserves to be called unique.
There's so many talented people.
It will thankfully never be done again. It was not a very good movie, as you'll recall.
I just was fascinated by the amount of talent that was in it. And,
extraordinary.
And
can you imagine?
Yeah.
Lana Turner, Cliff Robertson, Hugh O'Brien, Ruth Roman, Virginia Gray.
Nick Adams, I believe, was also in it.
Oh, sorry?
Nick Adams?
No, not in that one. He was in another Columbia picture that I was in called The Interns.
Mm-hmm. I always find that film so unique because you had this amalgam of talent and a very strange screenplay that couldn't decide what it wanted to be. I always found that everybody in the film looks a little bit uncomfortable. But fortunately, shortly thereafter, you went from Gower Street in Columbia to Culver City and ended up as the girl from Uncle, and that's why we're here today to celebrate. We want to thank Stephanie Powers so very, very much for joining us on this Warner Archive Collection podcast today to celebrate the release of The Girl from Uncle on DVD. Thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure.
And no, the pleasure was all mine.
Well, thank you so much, and we hope to speak with you again soon. Have a great day. And thanks to everyone for listening.